Hello and welcome to Looking Sideways, a show about making. How we make things and how those things make us.
My name's Andrew Slee and this is the sixth episode in a special series coming from Shenzhen in China, the world centre of electronics manufacturing.
I'm here with Lighthouse as part of the British Council's Hello Shenzhen programme, a cultural exchange that brings Chinese makers to the UK and British makers to China. In this episode, I'm speaking with three people all working in maker education. It's no surprise that education and the role of making within it is as important here in China as anywhere else. But some topics came up often enough that I think it's worth calling them out now. One of those is design thinking. That's a process for solving problems that draws on some of the techniques designers use when designing products. So, for example, going out to meet your users and developing empathy for them through research, building prototype solutions and iterating quickly through them as you refine them. If you're interested in this approach, there's loads of resources online, so I'll include some links in the show notes for this episode. Another topic that came up was sharing, the role of sharing within maker culture, the role of platforms in sharing, whether that's GitHub or WeChat. And if those platforms I just mentioned mean nothing to you, the problem of access to those platforms. Our first stop is at the Shenzhen American International School in the Shekou district of Shenzhen. I went there to meet Carrie Leung, who teaches a maker-based curriculum. When I arrived, Carrie was about to start a lesson in the school makerspace, a room filled with power tools and fabrication machines, where carts are dotted around filled with craft materials, and plans for student projects are pinned up on all the walls.
We're going to do an extension, a kind of a design challenge today. You guys all know circuits now.
Yeah, right? Of course.
You'll know how to connect them.
Yeah.
All right. Motor.
Motor.
Okay. I am not going to let you use the wheels. No wheels. I'm going to give you different types of motors. This is one type of motor.
Okay.
Wire, 9-volt battery. You can use the KT boards over there. Okay. And then I'm going to give you this box of LED lights and whatnot. LEDs come last. Figure out the structure for your motor first. Whether you make a car, a van, a bumblebot,
an airplane.
Whatever you guys want. Okay? So that is the challenge. All right, you guys can start.
Can we use a vector knife?
If you have it from Ms. Maya's room, and you know how to say hi, and you don't scratch up everything, yes. So you guys,
my name is Carrie Leung, and I am an educator. We are in Shenzhen, China, in a small school, about 300 kids, called Shenzhen American International School. It is, as far as I know, the only wall-to-wall PBL, 100% PBL school in China.
What is PBL?
It's project-based learning, so we believe in integrating all the subjects together, and it's kind of radical. It's very different. Like, we don't do the traditional classroom. So how we learn is through a project. So for example, the third graders are, you know, they have their driving question of how do I design a better learning environment? So they're researching what's better for your brain, like, you know, researching their room. And then there's a lot of math and writing. And so academics is scaffolding, and so learning is driven through a project and not through, I guess, very like linearly with a book and the subjects are separated.
Yeah, so does that mean that this, for example, in this particular project, this would appear within their maths lessons or their science lessons within the makerspace? Would it cross across subjects?
Yes, it absolutely does. It absolutely does. So, I mean, you'll get to talk to them later, but a lot of it... So what they have to learn for a three-year-old is scaling, you know, like it checks off what they need, you know, multiplication, multiple-digit multiplication... you know, I think measurement in simple fractions. So, you know, Ms. Kim has embedded that into, you know, their learning and making and prototyping of the furniture. So, oh, well, that's another thing with project-based learning. Like, there is an authentic end product. And there is an authentic presentation to a group outside of your school.
Okay. Yeah, so they're going to be making, or at least one of the things they're making is this is a sort of sofa that they're sitting on.
Yeah, yeah.
So they will actually be sitting on that sofa.
Yes, right? Yes. Like everything they're making is going to be there. So mismeasurement, misresearch, then they're sitting on it.
Well, that's a good way to learn. I've made that mistake myself. So we're sitting right now in a makerspace, which looks like a lot of fun. There's, I can see a drill press and a laser cutter and lots of tools on kind of movable walls, lots of cardboard, obviously, in preparation for this this sofa they're making. So in the UK, for example, there are schools that have kind of these workshop facilities. Is this, do you approach making differently in this school to other schools, for example, in Shenzhen?
Absolutely, I think we do. Maker spaces are in a rise, and for lack of a better word, I think a lot of us will not disagree that it's trendy right now. But at the end of the day, why do we do things? You know, as an educator, I have to think about this. Why do we do the things we do? Is it because it's trendy? Is it because we have funding for it to do it? Is it because everybody else is doing it? And so what we see in other schools, because it's a small community here and we really share with each other, a lot of, you know, our counterparts in public and international schools are facing this challenge. Especially the public schools, they have a lot of funding. Mm. They have amazing spaces, amazing equipment, but yet nobody's using them. Things have dust on it.
Right.
And it's not, you know, access to the space is a challenge for them because their curriculum is pretty rigid and they have to do certain things. So when do they find time in their to use the space?
Yeah. So it's very easy to draw a line between, for example, you know, this project we're talking about here, build, you know, where they're building some furniture. It's easy to draw a line between the skills you would learn there in, for example, design or construction, mm-hmm. to a job, for example, in design or engineering. Mm-hmm. Is there a wider benefit to this kind of approach to education that goes beyond learning skills that are going to be useful in careers in those kinds of fields?
Well, absolutely. Like. This is my personal opinion, but I don't think it's anything new. There's more and more discussions, focus, research on how our education, on average, education, so let's say schooling, not education, like just schooling, on average worldwide is losing relevancy. Like kids go to school, they come out unprepared, and so. It comes back to like, what is the purpose of anything we do as educators? Why do we put them in schools? Is it so that they can get a better test on a test score? Like in China, you know, the Gaokao is a high stakes test, and this one test will determine how well you will fare in life, like by a huge percentage.
What age is that?
That's high school.
Okay.
That's high school. Is the purpose of schooling going to a good university? Or is the purpose of education and learning something a little bit more than that, you know, to get a better job or improve your own status in life? Or is it a little bit grander than that? Is the purpose of schooling, and learning to be able to equip yourself to problem solve for your community? Mm. And for me, you know, the purpose of education and a lot of the things we do in this school is even a look, taking a step further back than that. You know, we learn so that we're prepared for the challenges of tomorrow to progress humanity, to problem solve for what we need within our community. Being a maker is somebody that wants to make a positive impact. Mm. So a lot of the projects and the skills and the things that we do is a mindset. It's not just academics. We go through design thinking process, similar to Stanford D schools, yeah. Right? We start with empathy. Our older kids go through empathy, define, ideation, prototype, feedback, and then share, right? Like Stanford doesn't have that, but sharing is very important.
It's interesting that you bring up design thinking because I don't think this is just in the UK. I think this is in lots of places, that this idea that you can use the tools of design and that sort of, if you like, slightly branded term, design thinking, you can use that approach to solve lots of problems and that we can all apply some of what designers do in our lives in lots of different places.
Yeah, and so, you know, when I talk to the kids about it or, you know, when I explain to any teachers that are interested about design thinking, it's nothing new, right? Like, we have the writing process, the scientific method. I mean, there's processes for everything. But this, you know, now that it's popular, design thinking is just a tool, a method that I like to think it's pretty customizable and changeable to whatever your needs are, for an overall, like, to approach any problem or anything that you want to create, you know? And so it's not specific just for writing or science or, you know.
You mentioned before some of these things can be kind of trendy. You know, having a makerspace in a school perhaps is a trendy thing. And certainly that word maker is a trendy word. Which is a double-edged sword, I suppose. Do you get a sense from either the kids or their parents that the idea of being a maker is something that they would identify with?
I think it really depends on the community and how they define it in the context. And, you know, here, you know...
What community do you serve here? It's an international school, isn't it?
So when I say... I do things here in my school at SACE, and we have a very healthy maker mindset, maker thing going on. And definitely the word maker elicits a sense of agency and in the kids, independence and confidence, you know. So you were at the Maker Fair. I mean, how many kids were there showing their stuff?
Well, it's funny you should say that because I interviewed some kids, but it was really inspiring to see kids, young people behind the stalls sharing their projects. Yes. I've organised Maker Fairs in the UK and we always try to reach out to schools and young people to try and get them. I mean, it's great to see them coming in as visitors, but I really want to see them behind the stall.
Yes. Running the
projects.
Show.
Yeah, running the show, however they want it to be, and talking to people. And I saw that a lot, a huge amount.
That's awesome.
Shenzhen Maker Fair. It was great. And they were really inspiring to speak to.
And that's the thing. I mean, you know, not that money is a metric of success, but, you know, like the billionaires nowadays are billionaires before they're 30, you know, and I don't know, like, and that's part of the maker mindset that I feel like is very important for our kids too, that developing that sense of agency that I can do it, you know, whatever it is, I can do it, you know, regardless if I have support or not.
Schools like SAIS need teachers who are equipped to use this project-based learning approach. They need the technical skills, like how to use the vinyl cutter. They need creative skills to develop curriculum content or design challenges. And they need confidence to help students learn through their mistakes and overcome their own uncertainty. Fortunately, just down the road from SAIS is Steamhead Makerspace. It was set up by James Simpson, and he's trying to create a space where a community of teachers can learn from each other. And by teachers, he means anyone with knowledge to share. We spoke a lot about sharing as core to the Maker ethos. And he also told me about the Maker Badges, which he's using to build out a replicable system of Maker education classes. But we started by talking about how he's trying to make the Makerspace itself a replicable model. Something that could pop up anywhere there's a community of people who want to make together and share what they've learned through teaching.
I call this a garden-sized makerspace. In China, a garden is a collection of tall buildings surrounded by like a wall. That's a community. Okay. The community makerspace, garden-sized makerspace. I want the next building across the street, the next 32-floor building, to have one of these in there. Because there's probably 4 or 5 moms that are interested in it, and if they pitch together, they can afford to rent a few rooms in that building and have the space. And it'll demystify the idea that 3D printers and laser cutters and electronics are these high-tech, high-price things.
Yeah. So there need to be some sort of patterns that people can follow, if you like, to make a space, for example, like this, if you want to replicate the space in lots of different places.
Yeah. So there's already tons of free information online and guides on how to build spaces. Mm. Two, I have taken what I feel is the most valuable of that information, put it on my site. I try to translate it into Chinese where possible, although I still need help translating more of it into Chinese, or localizing the content. Lists of equipment, lists of materials, expectations about space, safety guidelines, all of that stuff is available. And then what to do in the space. Mm. So a lot of my past few quarters have been developing maker badges.
Yes.
Which are like scout badges.
Yeah. Are they digital things or physical things?
A badge is defined by information. So laser cutting. I say what a laser cutting badge is. So all of that information, I print it physically, I put it digitally, I share it on social media, however I can get it out there. The badges are not my idea. So open badges are the concept of MacArthur Foundation and Mozilla.
Yeah.
So I have these badges online. I make them on Open Badge Factory, which is a paid site. But students receiving badges put them into their backpack, their digital backpack, and they can display them on any site that has that open source software installed. So Open Badge Passport is the one that I use for my demos, but Mozilla has backpack sites all over the place where students can display their digital badges.
And they record some sort of achievement or level of skill or?
Yeah, so there's about 70 badges. Which sounds like a lot, but actually it's just because there's a lot of things to do in a makerspace. The badges are in three categories: physical design, mental design, and digital design. So by physical design, I mean a lot of craft skills. Paper craft, wood craft, forms of digital fabrication, laser cutting, 3D printing, but also things like structural engineering, making compound machines, and even the crafting of robotic structures, so breadboards, adding electronic sensors into things. All things that you build with your hands are physical design skills. Digital design is symbolic, is putting stuff into language. So coding falls under digital design, as does illustration, vector illustration or raster illustration, modeling stuff out, making simple drafts or complicated engineering drafts, transitioning stuff from 2D to 3D, as well as forms of recording and publishing, like photography, 3D scanning, poster design, creating websites, publishing portfolios. And the last category is mental design, imagining the form an idea will take. So both creating a goal by understanding your target audience, by empathizing with them, by understanding what social services they need, but also by working closely with them, by doing interviews, by defining their problems of the communities, by role-playing solutions with them before you build anything at all, and also truly sharing your idea. In digital design, recording ideas is important. In mental design, how to get those things into the world is important. Giving presentations at maker fairs or to your third grade class, creating teaching plans that others can use, making YouTube videos. So with those three design categories, people can iterate and bring their ideas to life.
I see the copy of The Art of Tinkering.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Over there. Has that been a big influence on the kind of work you do here?
You know, I'd like it to be. These guys are so good at that digital step, at transforming what they do into shareable media, and I'm not that good yet. it's an area that we are trying to become better at. If anything, this has been an inspiration to become better at sharing.
Mm. Yeah, I don't know if they still run it, but I did a Coursera, the online learning thing.
Yeah,
they did a online learning course teaching the kind of various principles of that they use in the studio, which I found incredibly rewarding and
brilliantly put together.
Yeah.
With videos and tutorials and really good assignments.
So you finished some assignments?
Yeah, yeah.
You made some things?
Yeah, I made some of the electrical circuit blocks, the thing with like electrical components mounted on wood. And I had to do a little prototype lesson with some young people and get feedback. And
live young people.
Live young people, yeah.
Wow, cool.
So, it was really, it was a lot of work, but...
And how did they contextualize your accomplishments? How did they speak? I mean, they're giving an online course, so they don't know who you are.
No.
But still, at the end of the course, they're saying, you learned this for these reasons.
For me, the context was about their pedagogy or whatever, their method is grounded in, I think, quite a lot of research done by universities around the world and into how people learn, how people retain information, how people learn with peers and so on.
Right.
The role of play in learning and the role of making and experimentation in learning. So I think one of the kind of the bits of context they gave in the course was to relate it all back to this kind of theory, if you like, which again was I found very interesting and kind of gave it some substance.
That's
wasn't
great.
Just them sort of pontificating about what how they thought it should be.
Yeah, I think makers need more context and contextualization for their results.
Yeah,
and that will help people become more avid hobbyists and educators and learners.
Mm-hmm.
I think expert sharing is teaching, and that sharing is a big part of maker culture, as promoted, by the magazines and all the media around it. Like, that's what makes it cool, is that you're sharing it.
Yeah. Yeah, in a way, you've made something if you just make it for yourself, but in a way, the true test is like, is can you inspire someone else, or can you put it in front of someone else? And
yeah, I would say if you make something by yourself and you don't share it out, and you also weren't inspired by other people's sharing, then you're not part of the maker culture. You are maker by definition of the dictionary's word, but the maker culture is something that you're not enjoying.
Yeah, that's a really interesting criteria or nuance to add, because it's very difficult to pin down exactly what is the maker culture, what makes a maker a thing, why does it have a capital M at the beginning?
Right. Yeah, I think that the number one reason is the community.
Yeah. So one question about, this is more of a question of perspective, really. When I'm looking, when I'm in the UK at least, well, actually, frankly, when I'm here as well, I'm looking places up and I'm trying to figure out, who should I speak to and look at their websites. And a lot of these Chinese companies, I spoke to speak to Christina Zhang, who runs KittenBot, a really great company, but their website is terrible. It's full of the dummy text that comes with the WordPress template. There's just no... They haven't got around to doing something that is kind of Western-facing. Right. They've got fantastic stuff on Taobao, is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Very professional, and their products are great as well. But when you're looking in from the outside, it's very difficult to see what's going on.
Yeah.
So how do you share what you're doing here? And if I was looking, trying to figure it out from the UK, would I be able to see any of it?
Right. So Google is blocked in China. And I think the Western world knows that before Google search engine, we were getting Yahoo Answers as search results. Mm. And so that's the state of the internet in China right now. You search on Baidu in Chinese or in English, and you get Yahoo Answers style quality of information. You get low quality information. So this information right now is either not online or not indexed. And Westerners looking in won't be able to discover what's happening in China using the internet. Now, there are some ways to figure out what's happening, but it's not through a search engine. Information in China gets published and indexed in social media applications. And so searching through that information is really only possible if you're a member of those groups. So it's much more of a hunt, maybe much more like tracking down information in the old days in the West was. Yeah. You know, you go to the library, you ask the librarian what authors are good to look at, and then you go get that author's index card and you start looking through their stuff. So Weibo, WeChat are good social media tools. I post videos on MayPy and Youku.
Okay. And can I access those services from outside China?
Yeah, you can access those services from outside China. A lot of the searching will be done in Chinese, but you're having just as much difficulty as the Chinese do when they search Western websites.
Yeah, it's only fair.
So I share information out. I've got a pretty good WeChat Moments page.
Right.
Kind of like a Facebook page that people mostly just use on the phone.
Mm.
Like a successful Facebook app.
Yeah.
And so you can see pictures of the classes, download links to kind of lesson plans and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I do have a website. It's a .com website and it loads slowly in China, so people rarely look at it.
Mm.
I have a .cn and I have an ICP, an internet license for China. I opened it up and went to put on some content. And they gave me an easy 9-minute tutorial to get started. They said, we have WordPress. You can install WordPress. WordPress.com is blocked in China, but WordPress software is fine to use in China. It's good software. People use it all over the place. To install WordPress, the first step is to enter some terminal commands.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know terminal commands. I don't even have a bash application on my computer. I don't know if I'm using that word correctly. I don't have a terminal application on my computer. So after a few hours, I gave up. Yeah, hosting a website is very difficult in China.
Because people just don't do it. They use these existing social networks to reach an audience. Or
I don't know why. Yeah, I think there's a lot of reasons why.
Yeah, okay.
But I do know that it's much more complex. There's no cPanel, there's no control panel.
Right. And you don't have these kind of one-click hosting and installers where you just press, you know.
No. Yeah, no, you need to use terminal commands and connect to your server and
yeah,
stuff like that. It's expensive.
Yeah,
you know.
It's just like the good old days.
Yeah. Yeah.
People complain that the romance is there. They just need to come to China.
Right.
They can have this experience of hunting for information and installing their software through the command line.
Yeah, yeah. But we still find ways, especially for students, to search for information outside of the classroom. You know, we really want students to be able to access information not from the teacher, not from the book, from other sources. So that involves using cell phones and laptops.
Yeah.
And looking on the internet.
Yeah.
To find new ways of doing things. So it's getting better and better. Yeah.
My final visit was to see Lit Lau, who's the founder of LitchiLab. They design maker education content for schools to help kids develop their creative skills. We talked about the wider maker education landscape in Shenzhen, why there are so many makers building educational products, what's the value of maker education outside of school, and why is sharing so essential to making and learning.
Okay, so I'm Lit Lau, and I'm running a maker education company called LitchiLab now. When I started to do education service, my mission, or LitchiLab's mission, was to help kids to develop that confidence that you can try many, many things that people might tell you you cannot do, or might not tell you, but imply that you cannot do. So that's LitchiLab's mission.
What do you actually make at LitchiLab?
So we design curriculum program, and you can see something from this. So this is one of our student handbook.
Mm-hmm.
It's open source and on GitHub.
Mm-hmm.
So it's combined of five topics. five topics, which so you can see like the student profile page. I finished a program called Fab Academy.
Oh, yeah.
You know that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And a lot of tech in it.
Mm.
And then I really love the idea in it, the idea of atom and bit.
Ah, yeah.
So I put that into this student book and help them to realize actually you have digital identities and you should use that well.
Mm.
And after that, we have topic like electronic, fabrication, digital design, programming, and maker culture. Like what habits you should do.
Mm-hmm.
What habits you should do. You should store your thing online. You should share something. You should know how to get resource and support.
When I was at Maker Faire, there were a huge number, it seemed, of companies and some of the individual makers as well who were making maybe kits for education, you know, robots. There were lots of these modular electronics kits where you can kind of easily plug together sensors and LEDs and create a kind of some kind of logic physically. It just seemed to be, I mean, I've seen a lot of that stuff at Maker Faire before, but it seemed to be very prominent. It was by far and away the most prominent thing I thought at the event. Why do you think that making these educational toys in some senses and tools in others, why do you think that's such a dominant thing, such a popular thing within the mega culture?
So I don't talk about that like internationally. I talk about that like in the local context.
Yeah.
So like I just say that the maker movement in China has just passed a very crazy phrase, and in that crazy phrase, for one example, a lot of people started makerspace, like open a makerspace, and a lot of them didn't make it through like the last year because of lack of business model. So someone to count on government funding. So that's not realistic.
Yeah.
So that's why when I started LegiLab, I didn't count that in, and someone to make their living by selling startup teams, like incubator.
Yes.
Like selling startup teams to, virtual. But that's very random.
Mm.
And you cannot guarantee team's success.
Mm. You have to place lots of bets.
Yeah, you need a lot of things. You need to have very powerful resources and very key judgment on teams. So that's very difficult. So a lot of makerspace didn't make it like last year. And some small makerspace started to change their direction to education, like make that into an education space and offer their education service for a living. So that those people maybe from beginning are just engineers, but now they think if I cannot invent ground breaking star products, then at least I can train my skills, engineering skills in education, like in the education field, and get something back. So I think that's one reason. That's the sort of some engineers, but that cannot make it very far. If you find that you really like that, you need to go through this thing. You need to have the knowledge about education. That's one thing. And the second is, if startups team do want to make a groundbreaking product and education product seem easier to make than others.
Okay.
I think that's the second reason. Do you think so? Like a kit, it's easier to make than an Apple?
Yeah, I can see.
Or camera.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they think that's easier. And there are a lot of open source resources online they can take advantage of.
Okay.
Like electronic models.
Yeah. So they're not driven by a passion for the education system or for education and learning. It's more an easier way to start a business.
You can make your own judgment, but I guess that's the reason. I guess that's the reason. Yeah. It's easier to make. It's easier to make. Like for Chinese team, I don't say about other places.
Sure.
But like for Chinese team.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not in a position to make that judgment. Something that I would imagine, to me at least, feels like has to be part of it is that learning is so much part of being a maker. And if you are a maker yourself, in whatever, if you're an engineer or designer or just a hobbyist, you will have been through a process of learning your craft or learning some technical skills that you need to do in order to make whatever it is that you make. And certainly my experience of that has been very rewarding. It's fun. That's part of the learning is part of the fun of making. So I can see how anyone who's almost by definition, anyone who is a maker or thinking about making a product is going to be thinking kind of positively about education and learning and how they could make that experience better for people.
And also education is some topic that everyone would love to say something.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, education, important. Yeah. We need to do it right.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah.
It's easy to.
Yeah, no one's going to say it's not important.
Yeah.
What about education? So, is your work focused on school age children?
Yeah.
So, I'm curious about. Again, it's a very easy thing to see young people playing with technology, learning how to use materials and tools, learning about design thinking. I think we can all picture that in our heads and see that as being a good thing and, fun to take part in. What happens when people grow up, they become adults? And
how can these skills help them?
Well, not so much how can they help them, because I can see, especially things like design thinking, which are very transferable. I guess more, how can they be makers? If it's not their job, I mean, it's fine. If you grow up to become an engineer, then in a way you've ticked that box. But if you grow up and you decide to become an accountant or a lawyer,
do you think maker equal engineer? What do you think is maker?
What do I think is a maker?
Yeah.
For me, it's someone who uses their hands to create something.
So programming, no.
Website, programming is the contentious edge case, because lots of people I know would class that as absolutely making, and it's certainly hugely valuable and a great skill to learn. I think you just have to draw a line somewhere, otherwise everything's making.
And
for me, I just draw the line. It involves.
Hands.
Learning a skill, making something physically.
But laser cutting, you don't use your hand also.
Well, there is.
At least the machine does the job for you. So,
yeah.
So not your hands.
There are always edge cases. You could argue the same about a carpenter who uses a hammer. It's the hammer that hits the nail, not the hand. But you hold the piece in your hands. You judge the quality with your hands, and you pick the thing up. You feel for a rough edge. You feel how to, if you're using a laser cutter, you see these finger joints, and laser cut things all the time. How do you test whether that finger joint has worked? You put it together with your hands, and you pull it apart, and you see, does it wobble? Those are craft skills that's handwork, to my mind. So, yeah, I would include digital fabrication tools.
Yeah, so.
But I appreciate it. It's a bit of a.
Yeah, so people talk about that a lot, and it's good to talk about that. So I asked myself many times this question, and I think now, like after the crazy phrase about maker in China, people should be more conscious about these terms, like because some people started to say they are not makers because they think makers now, this term is everywhere, just everywhere, and everyone say they're maker. So my version about maker, I would like to put two things to define maker. So one thing is I believe maker culture comes from internet culture, like share your documents and work with others to make your job done faster or whatever. So that's how internet works.
Yeah.
And that's one thing about your identity or whatever. So that's one thing. So if you close your door and just making, I don't think you are a maker.
Yeah.
I don't think so. And the second part is it's about technology. It's about modern technology. So technology part, I would almost agree with the Fab Academy part. So it's not a... But if we want to talk about technology, then everything is technology.
Yeah.
Then everything is technology. But I want to focus on digital technology. Can be digital, can be software, or can be digital fabrication, whatever. But I want to focus on that. So
maybe we are quite different, actually, in our versions, because I can think of many makers who are not using digital tools and are not sharing their work. You know, my aunt is a knits, for example. She's not from internet culture. She uses the internet, but not with any great relish. You know, she's not from that culture. She doesn't share her designs online.
Yes, so I will use other terms for those people, like craftsman or in Chinese, 匠人. So I think there are other terms.
Yeah.
I don't think we need to put makeup on everyone.
Yeah, sure. I think I would agree with you. I think we maybe still slightly disagree about the digital tools aspect, the modern, you know, using technology. But I think I would try and bring in the aspect of sharing and of community. I think that is I think you're absolutely right. That's a core part of maker culture, that you learn from others and that you share back what you've learned or what you've made. So that
That's how grassroots innovation happens.
Yeah.
If you don't do that, then how can you make new things, like outrun institute in university or whatever? That won't be possible. Yeah, because you share and you co-work, and then you make things happen.
So before we got on to figuring out what a maker is, I wanted to ask you...
What's our question?
I wanted to ask you what you thought about making, and in particular, learning through making for adults. What's the role for... Because it seems to me it's a culture which serves young people very well. There's lots of content produced, lots of equipment and tools produced for young people. But once you leave school or leave university...
How can that work? Our question was that. How can that work? So what Lichilam's doing now is teaching that, right? I think the goal we want to achieve is help our students to master the skill to deal with their ideas. Like when I think everyone is creative, and actually what kind of job we don't need creativity. Actually, we need creativity in every job. Like lawyer, you need to be creative, right? Or accountant. Actually, accountant is very detailed job about numbers, but where you put this cost, right? You can put this under this item. You can put this under that item, and that will change the analysis, right? So I believe every role in our adult society requires creativity.
My thanks to Carrie, James, and Lit for speaking with me for this episode. Thanks, as ever, to Lighthouse and the British Council for making it possible. And thank you for listening. There'll be links to everything we spoke about in the show notes for this episode. You can find those in your podcast player or on the Looking Sideways website. To subscribe to future episodes, just search for Looking Sideways in your podcast app or visit lookingsideways.net. I hope you'll join me for another Shenzhen story soon.